Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show at the end of this half hour. First of all, we have Jim Graham in this hour talking about cadmium and cancer. Cadmium in your drinking water, why it's there, why ever it would be there, why this cancer-causing agent is there, and what you can do about getting rid of it from your drinking water. Do get rid of it from your drinking water. That's cadmium. The other story about corn oil not being certified, going through the EPA process of its overall environmental quality and environmental effect. That's another important story. And, of course, he's going to talk to us about SPF in skin products. He'll be here in 15 or so minutes. At the bottom of the hour, we have Lyft. Daniel Kunitz's story, which is really pertinent at Olympic time and every 4 years during the Olympics, talking about how we got to exercise the way we did, what happened in the ancient naked Greeks, the acrobats, jazzercise, ninja warriors, and then why women are changing the culture. We'll also talk about, in this hour, one of my features is going to be, and this is podcast 402, so we'll refer to it that way, the treatment of Lyme disease. And that's what I'm going to start with. Zika, we talked about last week, preventing it with DEET-labeled clothing, making sure you have a lot on. 30% DEET on any exposed area of skin. Stay inside. Avoid those mosquitoes. Use air conditioning. Just if you're in one of the areas, it will spread. It will spread to the whole country, I'm afraid, at least the southern half of the country. Plan a northern vacation, a skiing vacation next year, because it's going to be in the Caribbean. I really believe this is true. Maybe cruise ships know how to deal with it, but certainly the rest of us don't, and the Caribbean islands don't, and it will be throughout the southern hemisphere, so I would plan a northern vacation or a desert vacation. So mosquitoes don't live where there's no water in the Phoenix and Scottsdale Desert, La Quinta, Palm Springs, California. Palm Beach has a lot of water, of course, in Florida, but Palm Springs and Scottsdale and Phoenix, that's where I'd plan to go to vacation if I was worried or thought I was in the pregnancy-bearing age. But, of course, it's even worse than that because it gets Guillain-Barré and a bunch of other brain illnesses, so I'd plan on that even if I was an adult. What about Lyme disease? Well, most cases of Lyme disease occur between May and September in the northeastern, mid-Atlantic, and north-central states. That's where the majority of our radio stations are. This is the last of the live double-hit radio shows. To our radio shows, if you're one of our radio stations, I'll be glad to continue if you want me to. But in the meantime, we're going to podcast format. 50,000 of you download our weekly podcast. This is podcast 402. I will keep giving you the numbers, and I'll refer back to those numbers so you know where to get the guests. We will continue to have a guest on during each podcast. So, treatment of Lyme disease. As we said, most of it occurs northeastern, mid-Atlantic, and north-central states. It's caused by the spirochete. You don't have to know that. Borrelia burgdorferi, which is transmitted to the humans by ticks. The characteristic skin lesion, which is a red bullet, and it migrates, develops at the site of the tick bite 1 to 2 weeks after the tick has detached. So it ranges from 3 to 30 days. It expands over days to week. The classic skin lesion has a central clearing with a bullseye appearance, but more often you can't see it. More often, it's got redness throughout, what we call erythematous, and rarely necrotic or vesicular, vesicle-like chickenpox. Erythema migraines may go unnoticed because it often occurs in areas not readily visible, such as in our, the back of the knee and in your back in general, in buttocks where you can't see, and in the axilla. The things that they're often asymptomatic for a number of times and goes spontaneously away. But some of us get fever, headache, malaise, arthralgia. That's pain in your joints, pain in your muscles. And another species is doing it now, Borrelia mayania. So this is a problem because the second species is carrying Lyme disease, which causes nausea and vomiting as well. So this can lead to, if you will, infections of your heart, infections of your joint, infections of your nerves, and neurologic disease. Avoidance of ticks, so cover up. If you're going outside, you've got to plan on covering up totally and putting on protection on your clothing. If you see a tick, look at the ticks, especially around your legs, in any uncovered area. If you see a tick, try and get it whole and capture it and then take it to the emergency room. And you want to go to the emergency room as soon as possible. We use doxycycline, just one dose within immediately, or that's if you get it in the first 36 hours. After that, we give you 10 days of treatment with this doxycycline, which is a tetracycline-like drug. Facial nerve paralysis, which may be bilateral, can be a presenting feature. When it's disseminated Lyme disease, you can get nerve palsies. Often, oral doxycycline is effective, but you can get meningitis, other problems of nerves, and you often have to be treated with IV, intravenous drugs. And that's true for cardiac problems. You can get conduction defects. You can get complete heart block with it. And, of course, you can get arthritis. And then sometimes you get symptoms afterwards that are really problems or can be due to new tick bites. So the tick bites is a problem. Look at the CDC website, cdc.gov, for where the Lyme disease is. It is in New York State. It is in Connecticut. It is in Massachusetts. It's in a lot of places in the north. It's even coming to northern Ohio, not just southern Ohio. And of course, mosquitoes for the Zika. We're getting a lot of these diseases. I don't know what to say other than a lot of the problems. What about now? Let's switch gears totally because there's another story out this week that's really important, especially for women. Women get the diagnosis. About 80% of the diagnosis of thyroid cancer is in women. And 90% of it may be overdiagnosis. That is, the diagnosis of thyroid cancer because of more sophisticated tools and picking up of nodules has increased by over 200% since in the last 30 years. And 90% of it was wrong in South Korea. That is, only about 5% of thyroid nodules are dangerous. And so biopsy rather than surgery may be the right way to go. But the basic message, there's a basic message on the diagnosis of thyroid disease in general and thyroid cancer in specific. Always, 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 always get a second opinion on thyroid disease. Okay, let's go to another story. This is, and I think we can get it for freshman campus. Life poses new risks if you've got a campus, if you've got a freshman. The beware of depression, alcohol abuse, and, of course, sexual assault. There is overwhelming anxiety. Make sure your freshman finds a friend. That is the key to avoiding these, is to make friends with good people and to have friends throughout your college life. That's one of the real keys for this. When we come back, we hope to have Jim Graham talking about cadmium in drinking water, about the EPA not doing its job with ethanol, and about boosting SPF, what the FDA can do about it. And then we'll get the book Lift by Daniel Kunitz, K-U-N-I-T-Z. Last hour, there's a great book on Real Food, Fake Food by Larry Olmsted. If this one's as good, you'll be sensational. We'll be right back.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Michael Roizen, MD.
RadioMD.com.
Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. Jim Graham is here replacing, if anyone can, Gary Ginsberg on what's toxic, what's not, while Gary's taking a break. This is podcast 402 of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where we hope you stay well. And ours is a show that gives you the information to live healthiest at all ages. So, Jim, what is this about our water having some cadmium in it, and that North Carolina, where my daughter lives, the governor's just ignoring this major problem?
Well, Mike, let me tell you what. Let's go back to 1960. You know the name Erin Brockovich, right?
Absolutely. Erin Brockovich did a whole bunch of stuff.
Right. She led the fight with PG&E in California over the same element, and she won it. This stuff comes from heating metals. It's chromium. It's what they coat metal with, and when they heat it up, it puts it off into the up through the stacks into the atmosphere. And what it's doing, it's the particulates are coming down, landing in the water, and guess what? You're drinking it. She settled that case. People were getting kidney disease. There were all kinds of diseases with this stuff. And I'm a little perplexed why the governor of North Carolina, they're downplaying the risk of this water contamination when it's already been proven that it can cause serious disease and kill people, utterly kill people.
So one of the things we know is that there is a water filtration system that can get rid of this cadmium, and
yeah,
it's called
reverse osmosis. And Mike, I am just a simple guy. I don't understand how these things work, but I believe that you can buy them at Walmart. I don't think they're that complicated. But like I say, I'm a simple guy, and I think if you check into Walmart's and some good plumbing stores, they'll probably have the equipment to get
this
stuff.
You were a welder, and you don't even have to weld this on. This is a under-the-counter. The system that I like is one that is sold at Costco. It is called Hahn. It's about $199, and it lasts for at least a year. And every piece of water you filter then gets filtered out with gets the cadmium filter. It's called reverse osmosis. I think they're sold at Walmart and Walgreens and Costco and Lowe's.
And they must be very good, Mike, because I've been reading that the hospitals use these reverse osmosis filters in their water systems, and also they use them in the dialysis system for people who have to have dialysis for the kidneys and all this. So I guess it must be a pretty efficient system.
By the way, if you want to get rid of the bad smell that some of that dialysis causes, you can use one of the Aracena, if you will, essential oil dispensers. So there is such a thing that is used in dialysis units, I learned. But the cadmium Hahn system from Costco seems to be the one I like. Now, how bad is this in North Carolina? Is it localized in North Carolina? And if you don't have the answers to those, Jim, let's go to corn oil.
Corn oil. I suspect we've been sold a bill of sale on this thing. In 2007, the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RF, promised to incentivize green cellulosic fuels made from non-food crops. You heard me, non-food crops or crop waste. But you know
Wait, but I thought corn is a food crop, right? How can they be using ethanol from corn then?
Exactly my point. My point is, and we have one right down the street from us, it used to be the Miller Brewery. Now it's an ethanol production site, and there's train loads of corn coming in here, and the Environmental Protection Agency was supposed to be checking up on how it's working on the air pollution, you know, when we're using in our gasoline, and how it's affecting the agriculture and the water system. But evidently, they're just sloughing it off. And come to find out, I've been reading here, very interesting stuff. Do you know, Mike, how much... Okay, let me read this. Things do not look much better for the ethanol made from cellulose crops, which requires 146 to 149 gallons of water per gallon ethanol fuel, depending on the scale of production. To meet this, the Bush administration target of 35 billion gallons of renewable and alternative fuels production by 2017 with cellulose ethanol would require as much water, get this, that flows in the Colorado River every year. That's a lot of fresh water to be using up to make this stuff.
That's probably why they do it in upstate New York, where you've got a lot of water from that little lake called Ontario near you.
I have the Oswego River, but I don't want that polluted either. And there's a water pollution deal with this thing, too. So what's going on here? The EPA is supposed to be double-checking on this. And it says here, the water pollution issue as well. The National Academy of Sciences points out that expanding corn-based ethanol without new environmental protection policies would pose a considerable threat to water quality. Corn requires more fertilizers and pesticides than other food or biofuel crops. Pesticide contamination is already highest in the Corn Belt, and nitrogen fertilizer runoff from corn already produces the most serious agriculture impact on the Mississippi River.
Now, Mike, we did this, Jim. Didn't we start going to ethanol because we were short of oil and natural gas? And now we're no longer short of oil and natural gas, right?
And that's another point. They're saying that the U.S. GAO found that ethanol production process, the process of making it, produces nitrous oxide and other powerful greenhouse gases more than gasoline production. You know,
okay,
I mean, I don't understand what's going on.
Before we sue the EPA to do better, let's talk about the practices to boost SPF values that don't have a value. Let me tell you the one sunscreen that I believe everyone should use, and only use this, not the chemical ones, but we should only use zinc oxide, a physical one, in a micronized form. It's a little oily, but doesn't show much. Doesn't have that white look like it used to way back in my day as a kid. But this is really healthy, and it can be used every day. And it's a physical block, so when it says SPF 50, it really blocks both UVA and UVB. But now what are they doing, Jim?
You didn't tell the people what they were doing. Some of these manufacturers were using agents and putting an SPF value on here, but they were using agents that would cover up if you got a sunburn. You'd get a sunburn right through it, and you wouldn't be able to see it. So you thought you were getting the protection. So how they're doing that to save, or what's going on here? This is another thing that we should be checking up on. The FDA should have been right on top of this. There's a lot of people that have been, you know, melanoma's increasing. The amount of skin cancer's been increasing over the past 10 years.
We will come back and talk about these in our future podcasts. But this is Podcast 402. Coming up at the break is Lyft, Dan Kunitz. How we got the fitness culture we have, and whether it's good for us, and how women are influencing it. Daniel Kunitz, the book is called Lift Fitness Culture, From Naked Greeks and Acrobats to Jazzercise and Ninja Warriors. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where we hope you will take advantage to stay well. We'll be right back.
There's Here's more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. We're the passionate show that helps you take control of your health so you can live at the highest level possible. We're sitting with Daniel Kunitz, who is the author of a book, Lift, Fitness Culture, From Naked Greeks and Acrobats to Jazzercise and Ninja Warriors. Talks about how we got where we're getting in physical activity and, if you will, how women are now shaping the world of fitness. Dan, thanks for coming on. And by the way, I should tell the people the website, newfrontierfitness.com, newfrontierfitness.com, for the book Lift and Everything from Daniel Kunitz.
Thanks so much.
Daniel, I date my own understanding of fitness really was, if you will, Socrates and Plato, a sound body and a sound mind and a sound body. And then I really dated to Ken Cooper, I guess it would be aerobics in the 60s, where he started the trend for us by influencing, saying that fitness was more than just, if you will, looking good or being able to run, but also was important for health. Where do you date it from?
Well, I think that I think you're right. I think that the late 60s, early 70s, and Ken Cooper is the beginning of the mass culture of fitness, when more than just tiny subcultures and handfuls of people began to work out and understand that exercise is important. But what I would point out is that while, and not to take anything away from Kenneth Cooper, who is an incredibly important and influential figure, first of all, he brought us the notion of the training effect, the idea that you need to do this every day and progressively get better and better at it. But I think that with Kevin Cooper alone, you wouldn't have had the mass culture of fitness that we did. It really is the handful of women who read aerobics and opened gyms and opened fitness studios in the 70s that changed everything, more so even than he did. He changed the thinking about it, but women empowered by feminism changed the practice. And I say that because for thousands of years before Kenneth Cooper, men had been working out, and there had been men like him arguing for the health value of fitness, and really not saying things terribly differently than he did. He said it quite well, and he had a broad audience. But for 2,000 years or 2,500 years, men had been saying this, and nobody worked out. And it really wasn't until women started doing it that it became financially viable for franchise gyms and for people to work out in a sort of mass way. So I would
now,
add
now
that.
How much did now you're gonna have to this I didn't read in the book, and it probably is in the book, but I did not see it. When did women in the Olympics start?
Well, women have been off and on in the Olympics from the beginning. It sort of depends on what events you're talking about. Women have been allowed to exercise, and I do mean allowed, because for instance, in 1968, when Kenneth Cooper's book Aerobics comes out, women were not allowed in any marathon. They weren't allowed in the Boston Marathon. The New York Marathon didn't exist. There were some Olympics. There were some Olympic events that allowed women in, but it's sort of spotty. Every few years, they would change the rules and say, women shouldn't be allowed to do this because it's dangerous. Maybe women can do synchronized swimming. That's okay, et cetera. But for instance, women were not allowed to lift weights in the Olympics until the year 2000, as recently as that.
And now Jane Fonda, was that fitness? I don't know the year that was, but that was probably in the 70s as well, was it not?
No, actually, I think the first one's 81 or 82. But she, so she's an incredibly influential, obviously, because she starts bringing this notion of aerobics to through VHS, through video cassettes, to a huge audience, right? And she really publicizes fitness to many, many women, and then through women to many, many men.
As you can tell, I can ask Daniel Kunitz any question about the fitness culture, from naked Greeks and acrobats to jazzercise and ninja warriors. That's the title or the subtitle of the book Lift, L-I-F-T, and Kirkus Reviews, which is a starred review session, which is a really prestigious review. I aim to try and get that every book I write. But he has, let me read you the comment, an elegant book with literary qualities that suggests George Plimpton, an excellent contribution to the literature of athletic performance and of interest to anyone with a penchant for self-improvement and not just physical. This is a really excellent book, written well and with a total history, which, as you can tell, I can ask Daniel any question, and he has the answer to it because he knows the stuff. NewFrontierFitness.com. So take us to now the current time, if you will. We've had Jane Fonda, and then where are we now, and is it still women leading it? Is it men? Who does most of the fitness work now?
I think it's both men and women, but yeah. So let me talk about where we are and sort of a little bit about how we got there. About 15 years ago, things really started to change. We already had a mass culture of fitness. There were people running. There were people going to gyms. There were people doing aerobics classes and whatever. But first of all, the reasons for doing that was almost exclusively around aesthetics, meaning how you looked, whether you were skinny enough, or whether, you know, or perhaps if you were one of the very few people doing bodybuilding, whether you looked muscular and fit. But there wasn't any real sense of performance. And really what changes in the last 15 years is that, first of all, we get the first really operational definition of fitness. We get an idea of exactly what we're talking about. Secondly, people begin to work out more for performance than purely looks. I'm not saying they stopped working out for looks, but how their health and performance improves becomes more and more important. Also, I'd say that at the cutting edge of the newer fitness movement, athleticism becomes the sort of dominant way of thinking about it, as opposed to just activities. You know, if in 1980 you were healthy or fit, if you went out on the weekend and played a game of soccer, say, or played a game of tennis, but it wasn't this holistic way of looking at your life and your health, where you realize that, oh, I actually need to work out every day or every other day. And I need to eat right, and I need to sleep right, and I need to, more than just do an activity, I need to train. I need to exercise and get better every day, and that's what I'm talking about in terms of athleticism. And part of that is the notion of embracing both intensity, working hard, which was feared really before 15 years ago, and in fact, a lot of doctors argued was bad for you. Going as hard as you can, or high intensity intervals, et cetera. And then the other aspect of intensity is strength and strength training, and realizing that that strength is important. And I think in those areas, women have been leaders by being right at the forefront, along with men, of all of this. And so I think women are very much helping to lead the way. The notion of women, for instance, strength training is incredibly new, really is in the last 10 to 15 years, and has brought a lot of men, again, into strength training, which is a new thing.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about how to get more people, what percent of people are doing activities like this, and how to get more doing physical activity, and how to make sure people know it's just part of the culture. We've got to eat right and manage stress as well. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. We're talking with Daniel Kunitz, the author of Lift, a great book on fitness and the change in fitness over time.
RadioMD.com. It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, and we're talking with a great book author. Daniel Kunitz has written what I consider a fabulous book. It is really a fabulous book on fitness culture, how we changed, how we got to where we are. And what I'm going to ask him and really put him on the spot is how we get to the next level. Daniel, what percent of people are now doing regular fitness in the United States?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. There's an answer to that I don't have for you. And I guess one of the reasons I don't know is it depends on how you define regular fitness or regular exercise. But the most recent government numbers, I think, are from about 2008, and something like 60% of people claim they did some kind of exercise. But again, we don't know how much that is and what it is. So all I can say is I think it's going in the right direction. I think that more and more people all the time are.
Although if you look at the NEHANES data, National Health and Nutrition Study in the U.S., it now says that more than 50% do less than 10 minutes of physical activity any day of the week. So that means that 50% now do less than 10 minutes of walking any one day of the week. That's total. That's not in an interval. So it's clearly
shocking,
less
yeah.
than 50%. And what I want to know is, how do we get more? You've studied this. You studied how we've increased to where we are now, and you've written it brilliantly in the book Lift. By the way, it's newfrontierfitness.com is his website. How do we get more, do you think? Is there any secret, since you've looked at this around the world, not just in the United States, is there any secret, any country that has much more, and what's their secret?
You know, there is no secret, and honestly, there is no country that's doing necessarily better than we are. Except, there are countries with smaller and more homogenous populations that perhaps encourage exercise more by having more bike lanes, for instance, and making biking to work more easy. But for Americans, that's pretty tough a lot of the time if you live far out in the suburbs, and et cetera. But there are things you can do, and one of the things we can do is to recognize that there aren't secrets, that there is going to be a bit of a sacrifice. There is going to be some hard work involved, and not to shy away from telling people that. And the other thing we can keep doing is things like this radio program, communicating to people how important it is to get out and walk and exercise and move. And the more we can tell people that, the more we can convey that message, the better off we're going to be.
Now, so we can convey the message, and is there one of the things we've done, and I'm going to be specific at the Cleveland Clinic, because we've been able to get 95% of the people who were healthy have stayed healthy since 2009, and we're losing, our BMIs are going down. But part of that has been a large dollar incentive paid for achieving what we call six normals plus immunizations up to date, normal blood pressure, normal waist for height, etc. Have you seen any secrets like that done elsewhere, and what the long-term effects are?
Well, I can point to one little thing, but I have to say that work at the Cleveland Clinic has been excellent. It's really at the forefront of this, and I wish there were more places looking at this, looking at these problems in the way Cleveland Clinic has, and functional fitness stuff. One very promising little thing that's going on is in Marin County in California, in the public schools, they now have standing desks for the children. So the children can stand instead of sit all day, And that and just that makes a huge difference, I think, in their ability, you know, in their activity levels. We've got to we've got to start with children and make sure that they're getting they're both encouraged to get outside and are not living their lives in front of screens. So in schools you can do this, and I think that you sir, I think that you alluded to a really great idea, which is the way insurance companies can incentivize doing, you know, getting more activity. If you can, I've seen ads recently where, you know, if you can deadlift your body weight, you can get cheaper health insurance. And I think there should be more ways of doing that.
Huh. I've not heard of the deadlift your body, but I like the idea.
Yeah, it keeps coming up on my Facebook feed, an ad for insurance companies that will,
So we do, we have at the clinic, we have a large incentive program, meaning you get an insurance discount of almost 30% of your total cost, meaning it's about $2,000 less out of pocket, so that you have zero out of pocket if you have six normals plus your immunizations up to date. I'm really curious as to other things. So if you can study this, I want to encourage you, because Daniel Kunins. The book is called Lift, L-I-F-T, Fitness Culture from Naked Greeks and Acrobats to Jazzercise and Ninja Warriors. And it is his website, newfrontierfitness.com. This is a really wonderfully written book that is fairly darn comprehensive. I've also been impressed with there are the exercise extremes that you really don't need to go in. But have gotten some play, and there are more people doing those exercise extremes I've seen, such as mud wrestling or whatever the heck you call it. But you even cover that in the book.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I think I was particularly interested in the new and more extreme things that people are doing, because I think those show us where we're headed.
So, do you really think we're going in that direction? With the extremes, or do you think, in other words, I worry that the extremes turn off a lot of other people.
Yes, maybe. I mean, the thing is, what seems extreme now will probably not seem very extreme in a few years. I guess I worry too that it might turn people off, but on the other hand, it might inspire people. I'd hope that they'd be inspired and excited by if only the entertainment value of people doing these things.
Well, we've got to turn. We've got a hard stop, Dan. Thank you very much. It is, the book is called Lift, and it is by Daniel Kunitz, K-U-N-I-T-Z, the newfrontierfitness.com. It is an incredibly well-written book. He talks about everything from fitness politics to the history of fitness. And Ken Cooper, obviously, is mentioned in there as one of my heroes. We'll be back next week on podcast form. We start these podcasts. This is podcast 402. Since 50,000 of you download the podcast, we're going to that alone. The whole Radio MD sequence is going to that. But I want to thank our engineer, Ben, who's done an outstanding job.